Okay, so it's been a while since my last episode, but I think it's timely, this one. Some of you may know that I'm a an innovation advisor, and part of what I do is I work for a government agency in New Zealand called Callaghan Innovation, and I specialize in Web3, AI, software, autonomous organizations, those kinds of ventures. And ultimately, my role is to be able to unearth and identify a potential frontier venture, meaning frontier innovation, ideally the next unicorn. And so part of my day-to-day job is I look after a portfolio of founders of frontier ventures in that space, and utilizing my expertise and skills, I help guide them, either into R&D mode and help them to access resources along the way. Or more often than not, it's an organization that has been doing R&D for a while and helping them to get onto a commercialization path so they can commercialize that their R&D. And so the reality of the space. So I look after Web3. So within Web3, it could be a venture that is the next, it could be the next replacement for the blockchain. It could be a new protocol. It could be a crypto asset. It could be it could be a distributed application, a decentralized application. It could be any number of things. And I think the thing that I find interesting is that people assume that I'm a cryptocurrency, crypto assets kind of person. And the truth is I own less than $100 worth of cryptocurrency. I'm not up with the play on what's happening in the cryptocurrency space, and I'm not even interested in the slightest. And people are often surprised by this. Well, how can you be the expert in Web3 and not be into cryptocurrency? So I'm going to explain that now. So I'm noticing on LinkedIn and online, a lot of people are talking about how CBDCs, a government-controlled, centralized cryptocurrency. And I'm getting asked about it quite a lot now. And, a lot of people are saying that stable coins, meaning an asset, an intangible asset, a digital asset that's backed by a tangible value, they say this is going to be the next big thing. This is going to be the next wave. This is going to be, what takes us into the next phase. And, some people say, centralized government owned and regulated currency is where it's going to go. Some are saying Bitcoin is going to be the de facto, and in some countries that's even happening already. And doing what I do for a job, people, they want my opinion. The most common question I get asked is, when do you think it's going to turn bullish again? When it's, depending whether it's bearish or bullish. And I'm just not interested, and I'm going to explain why. Actually, I'm going to throw one more thing into the mix. The other thing is people talking about, well, fiat currency is going to die. Fiat currency is dead. And cryptocurrencies have proven that debt-based means of exchange, i.e. fiat currency, is dead. And so I'm going to share my perspective, because working for a government agency, Callaghan Innovation, we don't have any teeth. We are simply advisors, researchers, scientists, we're there to guide and support and assist other people on their journey. We are indifferent to the perspectives of everyone. We're only interested in actualizing the potential of their innovation. So whether it's the Reserve Bank that we deal with and they engage us to consult and assist with strategy and all sorts of things, or whether you are a, let's say, an extremely disruptive DAO that has, let's say it's the next disruptive thing in NFTs, and it's a new form of DAO that's impervious to government regulation. So whether you are either side of that spectrum, we're entirely indifferent. We are a container for all of the innovation in the economy. And it's important for me to say I'm speaking as myself, David Ding, that these aren't the views of Callaghan Innovation. But this is my perspective as a human being. And so we're going to help you regardless, because the economy is made up of all of it. Regulated, non-regulated, disruptive, graceful, innovative, stagnant, centralized organizations, decentralized organizations. And that is how it is always going to be. Wanting the entire ecosystem to be one thing and to be one way is ridiculous. And I can tell you from being in my position, doing what I do, the diversity is what makes it beautiful. And in fact, the diversity of it is what causes it to thrive. And the constant challenging of these opposing perspectives is forcing both of those polarities to evolve and to change and to adapt and become more. And inevitably, what you see is each polarized aspect integrating more and more of its counterpart over time, becoming more of a fusion of both. And we're seeing this with decentralization. So we decentralize everything, decentralized authority, and then it fragments like crazy. And it just keeps fragmenting and fragmenting. And what happens when you take something that's valuable and you just spray it, you diffuse it everywhere, then it has much, much less impact. It's like your focus. If you're focused on one thing, then you can have a far greater impact by imbuing all of your time and energy and effort into that one thing than if you spray your energy and your attention across millions of things. And so it's the same with decentralization. If you want to create a massive impact in a niche area, then you consolidate your attention. You centralize it. You can distribute the authority, but that's a completely different thing to decentralization. Very important to understand that. And so we've seen the extremes of centralized authorities. They don't work. They become too oppressive. And, we made it that way. As human beings, if we choose to defer our authority to some unseen authority, centralized authority or what have you, that's on us. We don't have to do that. But the consequences of not deferring our authority means we are responsible for everything, for every aspect of our life. So you actually don't want to be entirely responsible for everything. You don't want to be responsible for who determines who gets a driver's license. You don't want to be responsible for who makes sure there's light bulbs in the streetlights. Very important to understand this. You actually don't want to be totally free. You want to give your power away to certain authorities to ensure that certain things get taken care of autonomously. And if you want that, it is a privilege. And if you want that privilege, then the responsibility, your desire is to have streetlights at night. Now, if you're not willing to defer that responsibility, then you're responsible for it. So very important to understand this. And so what's the solution? It's distributed authority and consolidated fragmentation. So we're individuals. If I'm unified in intent with another group of human beings, we join our intent. We have a unified voice. So you consolidate the voice to give it a singular voice whilst retaining the individual identity of each individual. It's very, very simple. You have a collective body and they can be as fragmented. There could be a dozen people. There could be a trillion people in that group, but they can still have a unified voice. But the body remains fragmented. You know, it's not rocket science. And this is the nature of the voice. It's made of sound. And if the authority is deferred to a spokesperson to speak on behalf, then you have a spokesperson. And if you delegate authority for someone to act on your behalf, then you have an agent. Both of those vehicles have agency. Spokesperson has the agency to speak on your behalf, and the agent, and you know, a classic example of an agent that is empowered to act is a lawyer. You know, when if a lawyer sends a letter on behalf of someone, they say, I'm the agent empowered to act for XYZ legal person. And under common law, a spokesperson says, I am XYZ human being empowered to speak on behalf of XYZ natural person. So common law speaking to express the will, and statute law to act. So the body enacts the will. Very important to understand this. Your body enacts your will. The government body enacts the will of the people. You can easily constitute an entity in any country in the world by constituting it using your will in common law and then empowering a body or through an agency to act, to enact the will, which is the expression of the voice. And so the separations of power, it's so easy. It's so simple. And it operates in both jurisdictions. And so in truth, the ability to constitute an entity that's impervious to regulation is very simple. If you separate the powers and ensure that the will of the entity is separate to the enactment of that will. And so, you know, in the economy, if a government body wants to regulate against an agency that's empowered to act, it can do that, but it's super simple for the will of the let's say it's a common law trust, for the will of that group to revoke the authority from that agent and then delegate it again to another entity, spin up another entity. So you can see it's, you know, these things are, they're so simple, and yet in society we have these debates about disruption and regulation, and you know, the regulators won't allow this, and the Treasury won't allow this, and the Commerce Commission won't allow this, and the Ministry of Justice won't allow this, and they'll pass a law, and et cetera, et cetera. And you know, I deal with regulators on a day-to-day basis doing my job. And they're incredibly talented, wonderful people, and they're dedicated and devoted to protecting human beings from harm. All of them are. All of them are. And so the greatest threat to them is disruption, to disrupt the status quo. That's why they have so much resistance to innovation, because it has the potential to disrupt and therefore do harm. And that they are devoted to doing no harm. That doesn't make them bad people or anti-innovation. They are pro-preservation. And so you've got me, I deal with the regulators, I love them to bits, great people, super intelligent, ultra caring, and totally devoted to preservation. And then on the other side of the coin, I've got founders who are just hell-bent on disruption and want to decentralize government. They want to disrupt. And everything that is contains centralized authority, they want to decentralize it. And they think that's the key to freedom. And I'm indifferent to that as well. I understand the perspective. This is the thing. Both of those perspectives are valid. If you're passionate enough to want to devote your entire life to decentralizing authorities, then you've probably had a few experiences of being on the receiving end of an abuse of centralized authority. Now, if you are a regulator and you've devoted your life to preserving the status quo so that people don't get hurt, you've probably been exposed to some scenarios in your life where there was a lack of regulation and you've seen harm, you've seen someone get hurt, or you've been hurt yourself. So both of those perspectives are valid. This is nature that we live in. And your environment is determining the way in which your nature arises. So unless we can first and foremost just understand and realize that nature is what it is, it's polarized, and every perspective is valid. Every perspective is valid. If you're on one extreme, that's where you are. If you're on the other extreme, that's where you are. You don't have to justify it to anyone, least of all me, as someone that wants you to help you realize the value of your innovation. So I couldn't care less, is the truth. What I want is for people to be safe. I want what we cherish and value to be preserved. And I want to be a catalyst for graceful disruption, where we're perpetually challenging the accepted norms in a safe space, where we can fail, but where we come together to collaborate, to reconcile the obstacles and challenges along the way. The failures, which are inevitable when you're experimenting, they're inevitable when you're innovating. The fact that we come up with a hypothesis that we are inspired to challenge, that's what matters. The fact that there's an innovator somewhere who daring enough to challenge the status quo with a profound vision of a future that could come to fruition someday if we disrupt and change things. You can do a lot more harm than good if you are just focused on pure disruption. Without grace, then you create a lot more pain and suffering than you do positivity out of just pure radical disruption. And so in terms of, I used to consider myself on the far end of the spectrum in terms of disruption. My thinking in particular is, so I'm extremely visionary and big picture, but I'm unusual in that I can chunk a massive big picture down into its smallest component parts as well. So my view is I feel like I'm a container for all of it, and that all of it's valid. So I wanted to just set the scene with my perspective on the perspectives of the stakeholders in the space, in the overall economy, really. Just to set the scene, to share my perspective on the future of crypto assets, currency, fiat currency, CBDCs. Is it going to be Bitcoin? What's going to happen? You know, stable coins are the future. And here's what I will say. You know, we can't have debt-based currency anymore. We can't have fiat. And so I'm going to give you the perspectives of all of those things that make them valid and help you to realize that all of them are valid and all of them will remain valid. It's inevitable to me and it's obvious to me, but probably because I can see every perspective because of the position I'm in. So I want to tell one small story before I do this. And that is, let's say I went to the portfolio of founders I'm working with now and I said, okay, here's a fund, there's $1 billion. All of you can go into your commercialization path now and you know, get everything that you need to commercialize now. And you can just shoot for the stars. The disruption that would cause would be extraordinary, because they'd be trying to avert regulations. Not all of them, but you know, a few of them would. They'd be trying to avert the regulators. They'd be trying to exploit loopholes, figure out ways to not have to do things that regulation says that they have to do. And yeah, it's actually not many of them. There's probably only a few, but there will be some, and they will get away with it. I already know. I can already see the loopholes. I can already see that if that's what they want to do, then they can do it. And who am I to tell them otherwise? Obviously, I share my perspective on the ideal scenario, and that is to approach it gracefully. By making your enemies your friends, and find that middle ground so that it can happen gracefully. That's always my perspective. But if they had a big pot of gold, that they would ignore my perspective, a few of them. Now, let's say something happens in future. Let's say they do that, they exploit all these loopholes, they avert regulation, they go so deep that they can avert legislation, and I can promise you that is a viable option now with the sophistication of autonomous organizations and the nature of hybrid smart contracting that bridges the worlds of statute and common law. And yeah, cool. You've done it. You've averted the regulation. And then something happens. Something unforeseen, some cataclysmic financial event, and all these people get hurt. Now, whether or not those people were harmed due to that event in the market, because you averted legislation, because you averted regulation or not, doesn't matter. The fact that it happened and you're not regulated, and you're not sanctioned by regulators, it means you've got the biggest enemies you could imagine, because you had a choice to ensure that people were protected using mechanisms that are proven, monitored by genius level minds in many cases, and you chose to exploit them. And now that's the responsibility that goes with that, making a deliberate choice to avert something that's there. And then people did get harmed. This has a much more detrimental impact on our ability to innovate in the future, because the overcompensation for that event will be so drastic. And so you're ruining the potential for someone else in the future to do it gracefully. And you have to have regulation. You have to. You have to for everything. If you want someone else to manage it for us, to regulate one thing like the economy, like a stock exchange, like whatever it may be, you know, all the millions of things that we have to regulate so that we don't have to do it ourselves. Now, here's, so in that scenario, yeah, the technology may be available to avert legislation and regulation, and you'll be free to go for it. But I strongly advise against it, and that's my stance. But it won't cause me to stop assisting you with making progress on your tech. But, well, the commercialization of it for the GDP of the nation, ultimately. So here's the other end of the spectrum. So I'm only with Callaghan Innovation, the agency, until October. I've already developed something that is incredibly disruptive, potentially. It's so technical that there's only a handful of people that even are capable of understanding it. And so do I go ahead or do I stop and try and learn? And that's what I decided to do. You know, part of the reason I'm with Callaghan Innovation is so I can learn about legislation and regulation and meet the people who are doing it and try and understand their world and, you know, figure out if there is a way to do it safely, because I'm not prepared to do harm, even though I can. It's a choice I get to make as a founder. And it's the right choice. Is it frustrating not being able to share my vision and the reality of how profound the innovation is with people that understand? Is it frustrating that no one can understand it? Of course, but I'm left with a choice. And I chose the right thing because I'm glad I came to work at Callaghan, because I've been able to contribute a lot to the local community, founders, and what I've learned and absorbed from the people around me is just mind-boggling. What I've learned about how essential and how driven and passionate these people are about preserving the well-being of human beings is touching. And something I didn't expect. And, they are devoted, truly devoted. And so hopefully that gives you some context of where I am, the type of animal that I am. Ultimately, I'm a founder. I'm a visionary. I have incredibly disruptive ideas and, validated ones. And I'm not willing to do the harm, even though I can. And anyone that my, any regulator or legislator that my venture agitates, I'm not prepared to do that. I'm only prepared to agitate with mutual consent. And, you know, when I finish in October, I will have established a lot of relationships with people that I can have conversations with and, you know, can continue to talk about certain things until there is mutual consent and understanding. And so this brings me to the kernel of this podcast, and it is no more fiat currency, no more debt, it's all going to be value-based, all currency is going to be backed by tangible value, da-da-da. And so I'm going to say the same thing again. Is all of them are valid, all of them will remain, and here's why. It's because, let's say we said, okay, cryptocurrency has rendered fiat currency obsolete. We don't need any more debt-based means of exchange. It's all going to be value-based means of exchange. And it's going to be a stable coin that's backed by tangible value. Okay, so there's no more debt-based currency. So if we're not going to have a debt-based cryptocurrency as well as a complementary currency to the value-backed currency, where are we going to get a surplus from? Because you have to understand, if every form of currency, if every means of exchange has to be backed by tangible value that already exists, that's already been realized, where does the surplus come from to realize latent value? Whether it's a raw material, whether it's an idea to meet a currently unmet need, there has to be debt. The indebtedness creates the surplus that enables us to realize future value. It collapses the axis of time and brings a vision for the future into the present moment. That's what debt is. That's why it was created. The entire universe is fueled by debt. Very important to understand, even at the base level of a sine wave. When you've applied pressure, and then that pressure is released, the indebtedness is what enables it to have motion. You create resistance to something that has pressure and that is meant to be flowing, and you release it. And then it slowly catches up. This is the very mechanism for motion in the entire universe. It's indebtedness. It's a withholding of energy that wants to flow, and then a release of it. And the motion is the servicing of the debt. So if you have, let's look at the money supply. Let's say the entire money supply is now stable coins. Every stable coin is backed by tangible value, whether it's a commodity or whatever. But there's dormant potential, raw materials. So how do we metabolize the latent potential of the market? The dormant potential that has yet to be attributed to a new coin. How are we going to facilitate the exchange of business activity through the ecosystem to unearth that value? Debt. Debt. That is a means of exchange that has no value attached because it is devoted to unlocking dormant and latent potential in the market. And so what I foresee is a complementary currency to a debt-based means of exchange that is pinned to the value. Not a debt-based means of exchange. The stable coin is the de facto, has tangible, it's backed by tangible value. And then there is a complementary currency that is pinned to the stable coin that is created out of thin air, but is regulated in conjunction with the projected GDP of the market. And so if we want to metabolize 10% more, if we want to be 10% more productive than what we were the year before, then we create 10% more non-backed tokens that have the same value, that are devoted to unlocking dormant value within the market. Once we get really good at metabolizing it, it can become more. But then you've still got to regulate inflation. You've still got to regulate the benchmark value of the currency itself. And so enforced scarcity has to be imbued into the system, like a sine wave, to allow the production to catch up, to allow the surplus Because when there's a surplus, it has to become scarce again for there to be adequate pressure to force the ecosystem to produce again. You see? Now, the problem we have with regulation at the moment is that it comes out of nowhere. It's devoid of grace. Interest rates, whoop. Oh, I just bought my first home. I thought, you know, next minute, interest rates and it's a mortgagee sale. Or you can see the potential to generate wealth. So you've been saving up all your money and you buy a couple of rental properties. Next minute, mortgagee sales. The problem is we can't foresee whether, you know, we can kind of see markers and we can speculate as to what's happening, but there's no deterministic marker. Once we can put a deterministic marker into the system so we can foresee where, when there is going to be a surplus, when there's going to be a deficit, we can be self-responsible human beings and work to those fixed markers and plan for ourselves. So we can see, oh, it's going to be feast or famine, and we can work to that ourselves. Just like the seasons, just like the way the entire universe works. And this is where it will head, a hybrid. A hybrid. Where we become self-responsible human beings and we don't utilize indebtedness to remain at a baseline. That debt is purely reserved for productive enterprise that to meet an unmet need, to realize dormant potential, to realize unrealized value in the marketplace. And the technology is there now, but the vision, there is no vision. We lack the vision. And yet we could have all of these people around a table right now, all the regulators, legislators, the voice of we the people, the government body, the regulators, industry, opinion leaders, the unified voice of consolidated communities. We could have them all at the table. We could constitute something entirely new if there was a unified vision that everyone agrees works for everyone involved. It's there now. The technology's been there for donkey's years. Oh, we don't need the Reserve Bank. Yes, we do. We need the expertise. We need their skills. We need debt. We need indebtedness. Innovation depends upon debt. And we need a baseline that's immutable. We need a mechanism to diffuse surplus, to knowing that it's being utilized to meet an unmet need. And so it'll be complementary. The ebb and the flow, such is nature. And so is a stablecoin going to be the next thing? Of course, it'll wash through and it'll mop up all of the areas of the market that I would say are insecure, speculatively afraid of the vulnerabilities of non-backed means of exchange. But the flip side to that is, well, the shadow side of that is, imagine all of the cryptocurrencies now that are being used as a store of value for fiat currency. Now imagine those big bubbles, those giant bubbles. Imagine how much capital would be liberated if tomorrow we said, right, in 3 months, all non-backed cryptocurrencies, they have an opportunity to transition, to be pinned to tangible value. Here's the technology to do that. Here's the regulatory system and framework and body. to administer it and enact it. And the clock starts ticking. There's grace in the system. And the wash up is a big pile of fiat, a massive pile of fiat that can only be devoted to productive venturing, to productive enterprise. And then as a nation, we diffuse it, realizing the potential of frontier innovation, gracefully disrupting the entire economy together. Together. And that's all it is. It's just one podcast from me. I don't have a university degree. I'm not a regulator. I'm not a politician. I'm a visionary. And I have the perspective and the unique privilege of being able to see this for myself. It's all valid. All of it is valid. But how can we come together and do it together? Pop these bubbles with grace. We all know they exist. All of these intensely smart people, whether they're regulators or founders that I'm working with, they can all see it. They all know it. They all understand the perspectives, but they act as though they don't have any power to influence it or change it. They just allow it to be what it is and then just contribute to it, you know, the best way that they can. But we can come together. We do it all the time. It was only a couple of weeks ago, someone at Callaghan asked me to facilitate a strategy session with a newly formed forum called the AI Forum in New Zealand. And it's the will of that community that's established it. They've come together and nominated each other, established a committee. And the unified intent of purpose of that group of people is the safe development of a frontier AI. And they're not going to be responsible for it. They're going to diffuse their expertise and skills into the community. And the people on that, in that forum are extraordinary. Extraordinary. Frontier innovators, CEOs of companies, professors, you know, founders of extraordinary companies. So all it would take is to form another forum. But a pretty big one. A very big one. And establish a vision that everyone can agree on and start working towards it with grace. That's the essential thing. No sudden abrupt endings for anyone. No immediately bursting and popping bubble markets. But working on it together. And yeah, so that's my perspective. But again, I'll say, I'm indifferent. I'm indifferent to whether it happens. I'm indifferent to anyone's views, however extreme they may be, or subtle, or and everything in between. Because the economy is a container for the full gamut. And that's what I'm interested in. The full gamut. Unlocking the dormant innovation and actualizing its value. That's what I'm interested in. But we need to do it safely. We need to do it with grace. And everybody has to be involved and on board. So that's it from me for now. This one is called, I'm actually not sure what it's going to be called, but I'll catch you again soon. Cheers for now.